Search for World Migratory Bird Day on the web, and you can end the search a little confused because the day is observed on different dates in different places. That's easy to explain. Not all migratory birds migrate at the same time. It's a big world. Let's think bigger than days because there's a significant anniversary for migratory birds this year. Let's get the story on frequent flyers from John Alexander, who is the executive director of the Klamath Bird Observatory based in Ashland. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Good to have you in the studio. Well, the name seems clear, World Migratory Bird Day, but how has it been observed in the past?
So, World Migratory Bird Day is an opportunity to celebrate the miraculous migration of birds. Birds that migrate along flyways that span the entire Western Hemisphere. World Migratory Bird Day then also recognizing birds that migrate in the other hemispheres as well. And so, as you said, migratory birds is what we're celebrating, and migratory birds have a full life cycle. They have breeding areas, then they migrate to their wintering grounds. And so we can celebrate Migratory Bird Day every day, that we are still have birds to see and help.
There's always a bird on the move somewhere, is that what you're saying?
There's always a bird on the move somewhere.
So do they move because they just different resources in different places, their food's in one place and their nesting grounds in another, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's definitely there's a lot of mystery behind migration, but there's a lot of research that's happening and studying migration, and so there's different theories. Some of the thoughts are that birds that were all together in one place as climate changed over tens of thousands of years, new resources would open up and it would become advantageous for the bird to leave where they spent most of their time, take advantage of short-term springtime resources like plants and insects blooming and go up there and breed and then head back down to where they winter and spend the rest of their life cycle.
Kind of like saying, come on, guys, the buffet's open, let's go.
Exactly.
So of the birds known in the world, do a majority migrate or a minority? Or what's the general rule of thumb there?
You know, there's there's many different kinds of migration, and there's a mix of birds that do all of these different things. And some of the birds that we have around here do both. So there are resident birds that stay in one area all year round. Then some of these birds that are more local will migrate. They do what we call elevational migration, where they're actually migrate upslope during one part of the year to breed and then come back down into lower elevations during other times. And then there's a huge suite of birds, of many different kinds of birds, songbirds, waterfowl, hawks and eagles that have evolved to migrate long distances. So really jump from a breeding ground that's quite far away, migrate to the wintering grounds and make that annual cycle each year.
Do we have any idea about the number of species of birds? I'm not even going to ask about the numbers of birds. It's probably impossible to calculate, but do we know the numbers of species of birds that do migrate?
That's an excellent question. I'm sure we do know that number, but I'm not going to make one up. But in our region, you know, some of the birds in our region that we know of are passing through. They're coming from breeding grounds in Canada and Alaska, just moving through this area and then moving south. So we have birds that are only here during migration. A lot of our forest songbirds that breed here in western forests will migrate, many of them concentrating in the high elevation pine, oak, and cloud forests of Mexico and northern Central America and then coming back. And we also have, so those birds are on the move now, moving out of here. And then there's also birds that are just arriving here now and they'll spend the winter here. We don't see them any other time but the winter because they're breeding up in Alaska and northern Canada and they're arriving to spend the winter in our backyards, like the golden-crowned sparrow is a bird you'll start seeing around and you'll see for the most of the winter here.
So are there birds that, because they're just passing through, we might see them for just a couple of weeks a year, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there are birds like that. One of the things that's exciting that we have here is in the Upper Klamath Basin. We have the Klamath Wildlife Refuges. And one of the refuges, Lower Klamath Lake, is 110 years old, and it was the first refuge in the United States set aside to protect habitat for migratory birds, migratory water birds. And a lot of the birds that we see and expect to see on the refuge this time of year are just passing through. So large numbers of birds like white-fronted geese and northern pintails and some of those kinds of waterfowl just moving through.
So how many different species at any given time that might be just passing through?
Hundreds.
Hundreds, okay. So all kinds of different birds.
Yeah, all different kinds of birds that have co-evolved this migration. So there might be different things driving why a hawk migrates versus why waterfowl or songbirds migrate, but it's also all tied together. You can imagine a lot of hawks are following smaller migratory birds as they make their way and concentrate and funnel through the flyways.
Let me guess, because those birds are the food source for the bigger birds.
Exactly.
All right. John Alexander, a guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the executive director of the Klamath Bird Observatory. And we are talking about migratory birds and World Migratory Bird Day, or days, if you choose, and also the significance of this year, which we haven't gotten to yet and will shortly. Join us on the exchange if you have an interest in birds and want to know more about them. John knows a few things about birds. 800-838-3760 to come in by phone, or send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So let's talk about Klamath Bird Observatory and what it was set up to do.
Yeah, so our mission at the Klamath Bird Observatory is to advance bird and habitat conservation through science, education, and partnerships. Our headquarters are based here in Ashland. We also grew out of a program and a field station that we operate in the Upper Klamath Basin in collaboration with the Wildlife Refuge and the Forest Service and many others, where we house field crews during the field season. And really what we do is we do science, and we try to make our science relevant to different management challenges, natural resource management challenges that we have, and deliver that science and help people who can do good things for birds get those things done. A fun quote that I came across as a part of what you mentioned, which is a celebration this year of the Year of the Bird, Thomas Lovejoy, who is known as the godfather of biodiversity, said that if you take care of birds, you can take care of most of the environmental problems in the world. So really what we're looking at is how can we use birds as indicators of the things that can help sustain us and sustain our natural resources into the future.
Which comes back to a phrase we use often still in the culture about the canary in the coal mine. If the canary's doing okay, the people are probably doing okay too. So I was going to ask you why people should care about birds. That would seem to be a big one right there. If birds are an indicator of what's going on in the environment, healthy birds are good for everybody.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what Year of the Bird is about. Year of the Bird is celebrating the fact that we've recognized this for 100 years in this country. The Year of the Bird has been identified and is what World Migratory Bird Day is celebrating. Over 180 organizations have come together with nature lovers around the world to celebrate what can we do to help birds over the last 100 years, over the next 100 years. And what it's really recognizing is that we have an international migratory bird treaties, and we have a Migratory Bird Treaty Act that is one of the most powerful laws to protect birds, and that was created 100 years ago. And as a part of that, the part of the refuges in our Upper Klamath Basin were born out of that legacy, and we're one of the first on the ground. We need to protect migratory habitats for migratory birds because migratory birds are at great risk during migration.
So now people know why this year is so significant, as the 100th anniversary of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. It must have been a bit of an outlier for its time. I mean, this is not the age of great environmental strides, I would think.
Well, the turn of the century and some of the things that President Theodore Roosevelt did and started actually started a legacy of bird conservation and ecosystem conservation in this country. We had recognized, and ornithologists had recognized, both amateur and professional, that we were hunting our most abundant birds to extinction. And they had the ear of the president, and the president started protecting public lands and and created a legacy that grew into these treaties and grew into these wildlife refuges and the use of presidential executive powers to protect public lands. So it at that time, it was actually something that was prominent and recognized as important in society. And the scientists had the ears of the people who make the decision, and they were using the science to identify that there was a problem and do something about that problem.
You mentioned abundant birds disappearing, and I didn't read until just a couple of years ago how numerous passenger pigeons were in the United States in the middle of the 19th century in particular, mm-hmm. That you could basically knock them out of the sky in bunches by just sticking up an oar or a piece of wood or something, that they really would black out the sky. There were that many of the passenger pigeons, and there are none left now.
This is
not a single one.
That was one of the alarm bells that rang, and that grew into people thinking about this. And you know, over that 100 years of bird conservation, things like Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, bringing attention to conservation problems through the songs of birds or the lack thereof, and giving us wake-up calls that this is something we should be thinking about, not only for birds' sakes, but for our own well-being.
All right, so not to think back to 100 years ago, but to think about now specifically, what are you noticing in your science wing about, hey, you have wings at the Klamath Bird Observatory, what do you know, in your science operation about changing migration patterns, about changing the actual birds that are showing up in certain places because of climate change patterns? What are you noticing there?
You know, what we're mostly noticing, there's definitely changes in the timing of migration, and birds appear to be arriving at earlier times. One of the birds I wanted to highlight is a western forest bird, the Rufous hummingbird. Some people call it the longest distance migrant bird. If you divide the distance that it can migrate up to 4,000 miles in a year and its wingspan, which is 4 inches, then it becomes the longest migratory bird in North America. It depends on nectar. It feeds on flowering plants, and so the timing of its migration, the timing of its breeding season, is all tied to the timing, the phenology at which plants flower. And so if weather patterns or different things are putting birds like the Rufous hummingbird and their movements and their migration out of sync with the flowering of plants, or those flowering plants and the migration can't adapt to the changing climate quick enough, then these birds become the kind of birds that are at risk because of climate. The other thing that we've been looking at for climate that has to do with migratory birds, but really it has to do with where they settle in. So we're seeing that different birds we're predicting that they're going to shift in different direction. They're not all just moving north and moving upslope. Our bird communities are going to shuffle with time based on really large data sets, and taking those data sets and comparing them with the science that's out there about how they're predicting climates to continue changing.
We're talking migratory birds with John Alexander, the executive director of the Klamath Bird Observatory here on the Jefferson Exchange. So is there going to be competition between species for resources, you think? Is there some already?
There's always competition, and then some of the speciation, and the reason we see birds and so many different kinds of species is they separate themselves out, likely to reduce competition. The consequences of the reshuffling of bird species, we're not clear what the consequences of that is. So when we start seeing species coexisting in space with species that they had not coexisted with before, that's a very good question. It's going to be an important thing to keep an eye on.
Other resources to consider. We were talking about the Upper Klamath Basin refuges, including Lower Klamath Lake. Not a great water year this year, to put it mildly. So what was the situation with the availability of water for these migrating waterfowl?
Yeah, I got to talk to the folks at the refuge yesterday to think about that and be able to bring some more attention to the refuge. It's part of our education programs are highlighting that. This year, they're counting less than 15,000 waterfowl moving through, as I mentioned, white-fronted geese and northern pintails, where historically at this time we would see 50,000 to 100,000 birds in that area. And it is associated at some level with the refuges not getting the water that they need up there in the basin. with all of the competing interests for water. So what are happening to the birds? Are they flying over and then not as healthy when they get to their wintering grounds? Same thing when they're moving north. If they need to overshoot these wetlands that they used to be able to stage at, they get to the breeding grounds not as healthy, and they're unlikely to produce as many birds. There's really good research out there about what they call the cascading effects of one stress on a life cycle of birds actually influencing how they breed. So how the bird leaves, the condition that it's in when it leaves its wintering ground, can be directly related to how it breeds. And the effects of climate on birds in the wintering ground can directly affect how a bird breeds months later after it's been influenced by different climate.
And therefore affects the same birds down several generations, it would sound like.
Exactly.
So where do you focus your educational efforts? I mean, you mentioned your education program, and I'm just, what are the things that you most want people to know about birds?
So we have a community education program, and it includes classroom opportunities, it includes field trips, and it also includes community science or citizen science, so opportunities for people to get out there and help us collect some of the information that we want to collect to inform better management. So what we want people, you know, as you mentioned, we've always looked up to birds. We love birds, and we've recognized that they are our canaries in the coal mine. And what our education programs focus on is teaching people more about birds. If you learn more about what you love, our hope is that you're going to be more willing and better able to protect birds. And so then we also provide opportunities for people to protect birds, whether it be by buying stamps that support wildlife refuges and support local science, to going out and doing citizen science as a part of a coordinated effort, or just doing citizen science in your backyard through our citizen science application, which is called eBird Northwest. It's a part of a huge collaboration that's global in scale, but we have a nice local Pacific Northwest version of that tool.
I've looked at eBird before, and is it too early to start talking about the Christmas bird count just in the few seconds we have left? Because that's a real chance for citizen science,
right? It's another fantastic citizen science project, maybe one of the longest running citizen science projects in the world, especially bird related. It's not too late. There's going to be opportunities to do Christmas bird counts in the Medford area, down in the Wairika area. We have one here in Ashland. It's a real fun way to get out with birds and also collect really important science that's telling us how these birds are doing.
All kinds of links available through the Klamath Bird Observatory website, which is klamathbird.org.
Yes, sir.
All right, John Alexander is the executive director of the Klamath Bird Observatory. Thanks for the reminder about the importance of migratory birds and the reminder of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918 and that anniversary we have this year. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having us.